Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 39, and this is March 25th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I will take you through this magical ride through your server room, through your network switches, through all the megabytes, the gigabytes, and the terabytes. We're also going to be talking tonight about all that greatness of your servers. Please check out my website at tipsfromtheserverroom.com where you can comment on these shows. You can leave me a voice message or send those questions in. Get those questions coming in. And you can call those in at 724-701-0550. 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, by all means, send those to me. And you can email those in to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. That's jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter as at Technoman. Well, we did get a little bit later start tonight. I had a roundabout there with Verizon Wireless Services, of all people. Imagine that. And they're not too fond or too friendly with tech people. I tell you, you call in and you get the whole, I call it the runabout. And the runabout is, let me hand you off to this person. No, I can't do that. Let me transfer you to this person. No, I can't do it. Let me transfer you to this person. Let me tell you what happened to us tonight. I ordered my wife a new iPhone. Now, you might not be a fan of iPhones, but you'll still really enjoy this story. So I ordered her a new iPhone. Well, I thought I was ordering the right one. And by mistake, my fault, I clicked on the wrong one. We wanted to order her the iPhone 5C, but somehow we ordered her the iPhone 5 or 4S accidentally. So I called back immediately and I canceled it. And then I called back again an hour later just to make sure it was canceled, and I canceled it again. Well, next thing you know, the next day I see a shipment confirmation where they shipped the iPhone 4S. I called and I said, "Hey, it looks like this phone has been shipped." And they said, "Now wait a minute. Hold the phone. I don't understand this." Well, if you receive it, which you're going to, just mark on it decline and send it back. No charge to you, no problem whatsoever. We'll take the phone back. We'll put it back in our stock and like it never happened. And then you can go ahead and order the next phone. Within an hour, you can go ahead and order the next phone after I cancel this. I said, "Oh, great. Wow, thank you very much." So we waited anyway until 2 days later the phone arrived. We sent it back immediately. So I sent it back, and it said it's going to take 4 days to ship back to Verizon. Even though they have an overnight and two-day shipping to you, it's going to take 4 days to get it back. So I called them. I said, "Look, my wife really needs a phone. We want to upgrade this phone." "Well, what did they tell me?" "Well, sir, you got to wait until we receive that phone." Well, that wasn't good enough. I've been a customer for 20 years. 20 years with Verizon Wireless. So take this on a grain of salt. This next little tidbit of information is I took and I said, "Wait, I want to talk to the supervisor." So I did. The supervisor said, "Wait, sir, we're going to clear this up for you and you can go ahead and order that new phone," which I did. 2 days later, I finally received the nice shiny green iPhone 5C that my wife wanted. We activated the phone. That was last week. Today, she called me from my stepdaughter's phone and said, "Hey, my phone's not working. It died. It's not doing anything." I was like, "Oh, man, what happened to your phone?" Well, so I did what any normal tech person would do, right? I logged on their website. Well, it turns out that somebody received that iPhone 4S that they tried to send us originally, and they activated it on her number. Now, wait. We have a passcode. I have a username for Verizon Wireless, but they were able to call. And they activated that phone on my wife's number. Can you imagine the horror of that? Wonder if that's a drug dealer. Wonder if that's a burner phone that, you know, they talk about on these TV shows and they're just using it to make some kind of hot drug deals or something. And now it's on our number? What? I could not believe it. I'm still appalled. My pulse is still racing and my heart is beating out of my chest because I just called. Well, sir, we got to switch you. Yes. Yep. We got to transfer you to our fraudulent claims. Something happened. No, Verizon, you made the damn mistake, all right? You screwed up, all right? You sent that box out with her stuff in there, and somebody called and activated my account and started using my data plan. I am just totally upset, and I'm going to try to get through this show tonight, so bear with me, and I hope you can feel my pain and our suffering. It was just ridiculous. The guy didn't even stand on the phone. Oh, sorry, sir. Wow, how did that happen? Or nope, I'll just switch over to fraudulent claims and we'll let them. You have to fill out a paper. Well, thank God for you. And thank God for your appropriateness to handle your 20-plus year customer. You know what? Sprint and AT&T, you're looking really good to me right now. And if you make me an offer, I may just switch. All you got to do is buy me all these stupid-ass contracts so we can move on with this. All right. Whew. There's my rant and my rave. Wow. That took up 6 minutes. Thanks for letting me get that off my chest, folks. And sometimes they say that podcasters, it's better when we podcast and we tell you our pain and suffering, because I know you may be having some pain and suffering out there also. But that is what made this show late, thanks to the fine folks at Verizon Wireless. Thank you so much for your loving touch to your devoted $200 a month customers, which if you do the math, I pay them $2,400 a year to get treated pretty badly. Don't get me wrong, the supervisor tried to do a wonderful job, and I thought he did a really good job, but they screwed up. And now they overbilled me on my bill. Now my bill is twice as much as it should have been. Wow, I'm so glad I'm a Verizon Wireless customer. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Tips from the Server Room. And now we're going to get on with our show. We received an email from Robert. I don't like to give last names, so we'll just say Robert. And it starts out such as this. Jack, thanks for the shows. I am a longtime listener, and I love the information. I have a question about last week's show concerning roaming profiles. You said there's an added overhead on the network. Is there any way to overcome the overhead and allow roaming profiles to happen? Once again, thanks for the shows. Well, Robert, I got a little response for you here, and I'm going to try to clarify this as much as possible. The overhead I referred to is from people storing large files on their desktops, and it does happen. If you've been in the network business as long as I have and been running servers as long as I have, no matter how much we preach and we say, look, store everything on your server drive. That's where stuff goes because we have access to it. We back it up for you. People still like to download things like videos, audio clips, and whatever else they may be downloading. Maybe it's a folder full of pictures, high-resolution pictures, and they want to keep those on their desktop. So what happens is when that desktop wants to sync back with your server, so their roaming profile is essentially that, right? It's their desktop. It's a picture of their desktop, and all the data on that desktop has to sync back to the server. So when they log in any computer, all that stuff comes back. This is what tends to cause a lot of network traffic. Moving those large files from the workstations and the computers to the server and the server back to the workstation. Now, there is a way to overcome this. We've been looking into this, and this is probably going to happen with us next year. We're planning on rolling this out. We found a group policy, and I don't really have that for you tonight. I'll have to dig around for it. But we do have a group policy in our group policy management in the GPM for your GPOs, your group policy objects, that will disallow them to save to the desktop. That's what you're going to have to set up. That way, we know that desktop's going to be clean, except for some basic shortcuts or icons, which is fine. So that will definitely help you. The next thing is something we're looking at for next year is to set up all gigabit networking. I know, most tech sites are right now saying, Jack, 100 megabits is good enough and it works really, really well. And ordinarily, it does work really, really well. But you're going to have that gigabit networking on your switches, servers, and then take that all the way down to your workstation. We did that a few years ago with our finance department. We put gigabit NICs in all of their computers, set up a gigabit switch, and everything on there, and seems to run a lot smoother. And then their switch on the back end, we have it running from fiber optics back to our main servers. And it seems to work really, really well. Of course, remember from last week's show, I don't use roaming profiles, and I don't believe in roaming profiles. Now, you may, and that's fine. Everybody, to each is his own. You're listening to this show for tips. Remember, it's tips from the server room. It's not the gospel from the server room. So you don't have to do it my way. Just do it the way that it works for you. And about the shows, you're very welcome. I'm glad you're enjoying the shows. And for everybody out there, please keep the questions coming. Today, I thought we would talk about doing some server defragging. We started doing this at work, and we started digging into it a little bit because servers become really, really fragmented over time, especially your file servers, right? We have a file server that we have roughly right now probably about 2,000 end users, I guess, right around 1,500 to 2,000 end users. Well, they're writing files to that file server all day long, and that would be okay. It really wouldn't get fragmented writing the files to it. But when you start writing and deleting, you know what happens to a hard drive, right? It leaves open sectors and open clusters because the file, remember, the file is never really deleted. It's just hidden from the actual user. Now, after a while, that file could be wiped, but why not push it along a little bit and defrag? Because when people delete files, they probably don't want them back. And if they do, we have backups running that we can actually go out and we can pull that backup file down from different revisions, you know, from further back. So I did some research today and I was digging around a little bit and I found some research for work called the research is from the SpiceWorks website. So it's not my own. So I want to give those folks credit. And what they're talking about is RAID. Can you defrag RAID? And what happens when we defrag RAID? And I didn't even know this until I started really digging. And it started to hit home of these different things that could happen. And people out there, a lot of people are scared to defrag their RAID storage arrays. But I'm going to try to put some of that to rest. So I'm going to read some of this down here for you. I've been told that defragging RAID volumes with parity is dangerous because most defrag utilities are intelligent enough to know that parity data should not be moved. So remember that if it's a parity sector, it's on one sector and it's on another hard drive and another hard drive, they got to know where each other are. That kind of makes sense. How does defragging RAID volumes differ to standard single drive volumes, such as backup servers, workstations, etc.? I've been told that defragging rearranges files to the point where restore jobs will fail. This person was very skeptical of this one because they believe that the restore job will recreate the file or folder structure whether it exists or not, even if a system state restore would work, regardless of the defrag. But more importantly, defragging is only good until you restore. Then you must do it again because you re-inherit the fragments from the backup. So I don't really see that happening. I don't see, well, I guess, would you have to, so they're saying, would you have to defrag your backup? I guess you're defragging all drives, but I don't really believe when you pull that backup back, you're pulling the data back, the raw data. I don't think you're pulling the sector and the cluster levels back. And if I'm wrong, I know there's a lot of you out there listening to this podcast, and if you're listening to it live, I'll definitely open up my chat room here on Spreaker. Maybe you can answer that question, because I'm not really sure. Then they go on to say SQL servers. Are there any threats to actively defragging SQL servers? Now let's go with put some of this to rest here. We're going to talk a little bit about the solutions. As far as RAID goes, now, again, this is quoted from SpiceWorks. I've never had an issue defragging a RAID volume with any setup. In most cases, it's really not necessary. defragging does not rearrange the data on the physical disk, but does no and does not destroy or modify the data unless there is a power or hardware failure. So would moving the data in any other fashion. Since the RAID volume is a logical setup, defragging isn't going to make much of a difference, if any at all, so it wouldn't really bother it. It differs from the non-RAID because in a non-RAID, it actually relocates the data on the physical drive. In a RAID setup, there's a logical drive, it's virtualized, and the defrag tool would not be able to place data on the hard drives in the true order. That's a whole lot of tongue twisting going on there. So basically what they're saying is, yes, you can defrag a RAID setup, and it's not going to change the physical data as much as just move the data around, rearrange the data on that actual disk is what it's doing. Now they answer about the backups. Only some types of backup devices would even allow you to defrag them. This data is generally not used frequently, so you can spend more time defragging it than the time you would get in the performance for actually doing it. Again, defragging doesn't destroy or alter data. It simply relocates it. Now think about that. That's a really good statement there if we think about that for just a second. Because if you think about that a second, what's happening there is we normally just write data to our backups. We normally don't delete data from the backups. Remember I said earlier is we keep revisions of everybody's data. So even if they delete it off of our physical storage drive or our RAID storage drives or array, the backup data on the backup servers is just basically a storage. It's just holding that data there. So it's not getting deleted. It's simply there if we need it to restore with. That's what that data is there for. So it makes sense. You really wouldn't have to defrag that. And if you check it and if you do an analyze it, you may find what's going to happen is it's not really going to be fragmented that much at all. So let's talk about the SQL server. Threats of data loss or corruption is what they were talking about with defragging. Not directly. What can happen is you slow the performance down on the database so much that it causes users to have disconnect or incomplete writes, which can cause a great deal of problems. Never defrag a database while it is active because it will slow things down to dangerously low performance levels. So if you're going to set up an automatic defragger for your SQL databases, you're going to want to do that when the database is actually not being used, if you're going to defrag that hard drive. What I would suggest, I don't think it's on my website, but I did write a script a while back. And what it does, at a certain time of the evening, the script will fire, and it actually shuts down the SQL server. So it just takes the SQL server, just like if you would go into the services panel and you would stop the SQL service. So I do an SQL server stop, you run your defrag, you perform your tool that you want to use to defrag your hard drives, and then you do an SQL server start, and you restart it. That way you know that that data can't be written to or anything being done to it because the SQL server is actually stopped. That's the best way I found actually to back up SQL databases instead of unattaching them and reattaching them, and that gets really messy. What we tend to do is we stop the SQL Server database, we make a copy of all the data, and then we go back in and we restart the database. Now, I know a lot of you are saying, Jack, you should use SQL Manager, and I have, and you go in and you actually run the backup from there because it pulls it in the proper formats so you can actually put it back. But this is just a touch of a failover safety measure I have to hold those databases, and then I can put those back later on. Now, stuff like Windows 7 and Server 2008 and above automatically rearranges your data when not in use, thus removing the need to defragment the data so your computers are left on overnight they will take care of themselves. That could be a good statement, and it may not be a good statement. Let me tell you why. Today, and working on our defragmenting of our servers, I sat down, and I logged into one of our servers, and I analyzed the hard drive. When I analyzed the hard drive, I found, this was a Windows Server 2008 box, I found that that hard drive was 17% fragmented. Now, in this statement just made here, they're saying that that data will automatically rearrange itself, and I don't have to worry about that data. That is not entirely true. So again, if you're going to do a defrag on your servers or your RAID, you can. If you're going to do it on your SQL servers, make sure your SQL server is in the off or shutdown state. I mean the service. Make sure the service is stopped and in the shutdown state. Run your defrag and then bring it back up. A lot of guys in the business, and I don't know, I guess probably a lot of us, probably me and many of you out there listening to this podcast, we tend to work on off schedule hours. And as much as I don't like to admit it, I mean, I go to work every day. I work 7 to 3. I work an 8-hour day. But for me to shut our primary worked, overworkloaded SQL server down, I think I would be ran out of the business or out of my job. So we tend to do that stuff in the evenings. You can either, as I said, do a script and then do a auto task, just set up an auto task and let that task run and take care of that. That's one way to do it, or you can remote into your servers at night, do a VPN, get into your systems, remote in, and you know, work in the evenings late at night, sitting at your desk at home. I know we don't like it, but it is part of the business, and it's one of those necessary evils, they call it, that we have to do. We have to perform that stuff. I did find some tools. The first thing we're going to talk about here, though, is, let me bring this one up. And the first thing we're going to talk about, pull this over here so I can see what's going on, is the defragging and optimizing for Windows Server 2012. Now, I found a nice article here, and what I'll do is I'll put it on the website with this show so you can have a link to it. It's in a knowledge base. It's from a company called iWeb.com. And in iWeb.com, they have a really nice write-up on how to set up a defragging and optimizing your drives in Windows Server 2012. It goes through. It has really, really nice screenshots. The first thing you'll do is analyze it. And then instead of a defrag button, they have an optimize button, which, hey, if you're defragging, you're optimizing. Somebody just changed the word to make it sound more intellectually appealing, I guess, for a better lack of term, I guess. Anyway, but then you would optimize your disk would be the next thing you do. It will go through a couple passes. It'll tell you how much it is defragged, and then you would click on optimize and start optimizing that drive. And you can change the settings to schedule your optimization. Now remember, if you do this with your SQL servers, don't forget to use that script I told you about and take that script and take your SQL server database offline first. But I will put a link to this one in, and then I have one more that I want to talk to you about here. Let me bring this one up. And this particular one here I found on Wikipedia, and it is actually a listing of a very extensive list of tools. They have commercial, shareware, freeware, and open source tools. So there's a lot of great tools in here you can use, and I will put a link on that with the show notes too. I'm going to go through a couple of these. One I was telling my partner today that I used to use in the last job I was at was DiskKeeper. Now, I haven't used it lately. I tried to download a trial copy today to run against our servers and see how it works out, but it was always a very, very good tool. The one thing I can tell you about DiskKeeper that it does is it does allow you to run it on active open files. Sometimes, you know, when you have a defragger running, even on your home computer, if you run a defragger and you forget it's running, and you open a web browser and you start doing something on the internet, that defragger will actually pause, because what's happening now is you're reading and you're writing fresh data to the actual drive that's trying to reallocate all the, you know, reallocate all the clusters and everything too. So it will actually pause. So you're better off not to touch your computer. Now, what I can tell you about Disk Keeper is Disk Keeper will go in and it will do your drives. It will manage the defragging, and it will work around people using that server. It's pretty cool. And it also works around any locked files. And what I mean by that, say if somebody leaves a file open on their computer at night, and it happens. It happens to me all the time. And that file is basically locked open. It's not a closed file. It will still be able to defrag your hard drives with no problem whatsoever. That's Disk Keeper. Another one is Disk Defragmenter, and that is from Disk Keeper Corporation and Microsoft. It's included with most versions of Windows. There's Norton Speed Disk. These are under commercial now. These are all paid for products. Norton System Works, O&O Defrag, Perfect Disk, Ultimate Defrag, and VOPT. Now, those are all under your commercial ones. And you can look at these. Go to my website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. This link will be with this show. You'll see it there. And I'll make sure I put them in there for you. Under shareware, we have an Ask Logix. It's AUS, Asus Logix Disk Defrag. Under freeware, I was going to try this one today, Defragler. It just sounds cool, right? Defragler, and it says it works with XP, Server 2000, Vista, whatever that operating system was, Server 2008, and Windows 7, including 64 bits. And folks, this is freeware, so it's free to run. So if you want to take a look at that one. The other one is Kongtig, C-O-N-T-I-G. And this is provided to you with Windows Windows Sys Essentials is what that's with. So that's something you can check out. They said it's for Windows XP and Windows Server 2003 and higher. Disk Tune, My Defrag, Page Defrag, and Smart Defrag. And again, they have all the operating systems these will work with, so by all means, go to the website and pull this link down. Open source, they got BTRFS by Oracle, JK Defrag, they have Ultra Defrag, and XFS. So these tools I found, and I pulled this off of Wikipedia under List of Defragmentation Software. So it's definitely something you can dig into and get your feet wet with. Play around with some of these, and always, always remember, don't play around with these on your production servers. Wait, what did Jack just say? Play around with these, but don't play around with these on your production servers, because we don't know how they're going to act until we try them out. So try them out, make sure it does a good job for you. Even if you have a test server set up, which I try to keep those, you know, I have my test server set up at home. I can run tools against them. I like to play with those servers and see what's going to happen. If I can break something or not before I break it. I can't break it on a production server. That would be a devastating ordeal. Now, with that said, again, let me re-emphasize this. If you have any questions, by all means, send those in to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. I'd love to get your questions in there and start helping you out and answer some of those questions for you if you have those. I always believe in paying it forward. We're all in this together in some, you know, one way or the other. We're not out there trying to get each other's jobs. We don't, you know, definitely don't do that. But help each other out. I got people from other schools that call me usually weekly, at least once a week I receive a call and say, Jack, you know, what would you do with this with your Active Directory, or what would you do with this with your DNS? And I may call them and say, hey, what do you do with this with your database? Because helping each other out can make us a stronger group of people, a stronger group of technologists. And that is key in this business. We have to be strong, and the best way we can be strong is just pull together and share our information. That's the greatest thing we have to give to each other. Well, folks, I want to thank you for stopping by this podcast. Hopefully you subscribe to it on iTunes and pull it down weekly. Normally, I try to bring this podcast up online at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's live on Spreaker at Spreaker Radio. If you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, there is a radio link on the top. It says radio show, where you will be able to click on that. And then if you refresh it at 8 o'clock, the show will come live and you can listen to it live. And there's a chat window built at the bottom, a little speech bubble. Click on that and you can chat. What's even better than that, you can put this now on your smartphones. Spreaker just released a Windows phone version. So if you're running Windows 8 phone, they now have a phone version for Spreaker you can put on there. You can put it on your iPhone, and you can put it on your Android phones. And you can listen to it live in your car or at work or wherever you're. If you don't have a computer in front of you with internet access, you can still pull this show down live. And that does make it more interesting if we get some people in there chatting away. Okay. So anyway, like I said, I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing the show. I do appreciate it. Keep the questions coming. And I want to thank everybody for signing up for the Windows Server courses. It has been getting a large amount of new folks in there weekly, and I appreciate you guys and girls coming over to take the course. Also, remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, I know you might be wondering, well, why would I be listening to a show if I don't have high-speed internet? I used to do it when I was on dial-up. I would download the shows, put them on my smartphone or on my iPod at the time, and I would listen to them in the car. If you don't have high-speed internet and you can't take the online courses, maybe you can't watch them at home or whatever, you can order the server DVDs. I have a Windows Server 2008 R2 and a Windows Server 2012 DVD that you can buy with the videos on there from the server courses. You can order those by going to jackstechcorner.com. jackstechcorner.com. You can check out those DVDs on there. For as much information as you're getting, they're really inexpensive for what you're picking up. And I'd like to thank everybody that's been ordering those. It definitely helps the show move along, and it helps keep us afloat. If you don't use anybody else's Amazon link, you can use the Amazon link on my website, tipsfromtheserveroom.com, when you're purchasing anything from Amazon, anything at all. If you're buying a salt and pepper shaker, use that link because every penny helps the show. Folks, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2012 or VMware ESXi Server from A to Z, from install to administering, that's when you can sign up for one of the online courses at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. The courses are self-paced. You watch the video and you take a short quiz. And don't let those quizzes scare you away. So many people get, oh, Jack, I could take a quiz. I haven't taken a quiz since high school. Or, you know, maybe even you took a couple of quizzes in college. But anyway, it's just a very simplistic quiz. You take it. Once you complete the course, I do mail you a certificate. I'm not one of those guys that email. I don't like to email you, let you print it off. I print it off on parchment paper, and it's really good looking. And I send you a certificate for your records. You can hang it on the wall and maybe use it to get that future job. Once again, you can sign up at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, I hope you have a great work week, if that is at all possible. Check out those links I talked about tonight in the show at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. They will be under the show here, show number 39. And let me just double check that and be sure. Yes, it is show number 39. Sometimes you get so many shows going on, you start to forget what episode you may be on. But check those links out and see what you think. By all means, let me know what you are doing for defragmenting and how you defrag your computers. And I will talk to you next week here on Tips from the Server Room. Take care, everybody. Have a great day, and thanks for joining me. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.